to This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Peter Donegan.
As always, a great pleasure to have you with us on This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. My guest today is a member of one of the most famous footballing families at Collingwood, but he's got connections with other clubs now. His name is Ray Shaw, and he's with me in the studio. Shawry, welcome.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're looking well, mate.
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Keeping well. Yeah, everything's going fine, thanks.
What are you doing for a living these days?
Mate, I've semi-retired. I'm doing a couple of days a week at a higher place in Diamond Valley. So that keeps the week going, and doing a few little garden jobs, which I am a gardener here and there. So now I'm really enjoying my retirement, if you want to call it that.
What are you doing in the off season? Do you hit the little white ball around the golf course at all, or what do you do?
Not very good at that at all, mate.
No, well, none of us are.
Off season's really all about the grandkids. I've got four of those at the moment, Lisa and I, and with Reece coming back to Melbourne, we've been able to see his two little boys, Louie and Freddie, a lot more. And my daughter's got two in Geelong, so it's great. It's really good.
So you're the unpaid babysitters, are you?
Exactly right, and loving every minute of it, mate.
Yeah. What's the best part about being a grandfather?
Oh, I think just seeing them and growing up. And as I said, we're fortunate Reece has come back so we can see the two boys grow up. But I just can't wait to see the next time I see them. You know, a lot of grandparents say it's, you look at the times, oh, we can give them back. But yeah, I'm a little bit that way, but oh, I just love seeing the kids.
It used to be, Shawry, that I would ask you if your grandchildren, the male grandchildren, were going to play football or had the footy gene, but we can talk about both genders now because it is open to both sexes.
Exactly right. And I've got the three boys and the one girl, and Sierra's the oldest. She's eight, so long way to go yet before they choose what they want to do.
Do they show any aptitude at football, or are they interested in footy because of the genes?
I would say at this stage, you know, Freddie and Louie, that's Reece's two. They've naturally gone Kangaroos now, the Swans to the Kangaroos, where little Hudson, that's my daughter's other one, he's fanatical Giants. He's absolutely mad Giants. And naturally, we know who his favourite player is.
Of course.
He just loves the Giants. He loves them, you know. So it's a great thing for them to come up recognising a side, and then they can follow them right through. So it's good.
So did he take it to heart, what happened in the grand final?
Yeah, he wasn't too happy. He shed a few tears, probably like all of us, but a couple of days, it's all over. You can't do much about it.
Yeah. Where are your allegiances these days? Because you must be a little bit torn with Reece and Heater and what they're doing. And, of course, with your famous connection with Collingwood, are you still a Pies man?
Oh, look, I follow the Pies. And hopefully, you know, they go well. And when they play against Heath or when they play against Reece, it's a bit of a 50-50 thing. But I honestly got to say that probably my allegiance at the moment are with GWS because Heath is still playing.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, because you can go and watch with Reece's role now, has been with Sydney and also North Melbourne, he's in the coach's box, so you don't really see him. But with Heather, you can you're actually watching him for 2 hours playing footy. So at this moment, the Giants are probably just a little bit in front of the other three subs, at the moment.
So Heath will go on and play until he's, 55, something like that?
Yeah, I said to him at Christmas time, I said, you know, you're going around again, mate. And he said, yeah, Dad, I feel good and I feel as though I can contribute something to the side. So, and he had a pretty consistent year, which is good. If he had a poor one, he might have changed his mind. And I think everyone knows if they would have won the flag, GWS, he would have given it away straight away. Yeah. So he wants to have another go at it. Mm.
They often say, Shawry, that a change is as good as a holiday. Do you think it revitalised him to move up to Sydney and to have the role that he has now in that team?
Without a doubt, Pete. Without a doubt. It was not saying it was around the corner, but unfortunately, you know, Collingwood hierarchy and that made a decision about Heath. And he wasn't over too happy about it. It was pretty hard times for him because he'd been at Collingwood a long time and a lot of mates, and all of a sudden it's not a knock at the door, it's a talk like we are doing now, you know, see you later, Heath, you know, we're going to try and trade you and all that. And it got very ugly at the end, and he asked me to interfere with the GWS Giants plus Collingwood, and that's what I did too. So and I just said to both clubs, you know, don't use him as a cattle. He's not a cattle. He's a bloody good footballer. So let's do it the right way. And when I spoke to Eddie and Gubby, I think it was at that time, it was all done in 24 hours. So, yeah, he was pretty upset about it, yeah.
What about you? Were you upset about it? With your football club, the club that you'd spilt your blood for, did it hurt you that they treated your son that way?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. You know, you don't treat anyone like that. Mm. You know, a bloke who plays with a lot of passion, fair enough, he has his ups and downs like a lot of footballers, but had a lot of passion for the club and he definitely wanted to stay. But, you know, it hurt me just the way they did it, Pete. It wasn't good the way they did it. You know, it was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. I think both clubs were trying to outdo the other one and unfortunately there was a footballer in the middle. Mm. And he was getting it from both sides and that. So, yeah, it was pretty hurtful in the end.
You mentioned you had a conversation with Eddie. The one thing you can do with Ed is you can speak your mind. You can be a straight shooter. Did you give him both barrels?
Gave him both barrels, yep. Yeah.
What was his reaction?
Look, he was, funny enough, he was emceeing some do or something and he had a break and he rang me back straight away, and which was good. And as I said, I spoke to him in a pretty solid way and told him what was going on and, now, I don't know what influence or what manner he was involved in it. It was probably more the recruiting and bucks and that, but I would have thought Eddie would have had a little bit in it. And, you know, as I said, I gave it to him a little bit about, you know, blokes being very passionate about the club and you can't get rid of those blokes. You know, it doesn't matter who's the coach and whatever. You can always sit down with them and try to work things out. You know, Heath pull back a little bit or whatever. They didn't want to do that, but I give Eddie's dues, as you say, Pete. He's a bloke you can talk to, and you know he knows what Heath would have been going through and what the family would have been going through. But as I say, within 24 hours, the job was done, and that was it.
So, given all of that, what was your choice on that preliminary final day last year? You said that when Heath's playing that you're probably barracking for the Giants. Was that the way it was?
Yeah, that was the way it was. That was the way it was. And it's funny when you go to a footy ground and you barrack for both sides and you can't be a loser. But I was barracking for GWS and, you know, naturally you have a little soft bit. It didn't matter. It didn't matter, you know. And when they got over the line, it was great. It was unfortunate for Collingwood, but they didn't play well on that day anyway, so they didn't really deserve the win. So, no, a little soft spot for GWS that day.
When you turned up that day, did you give them a hope of toppling Collingwood? Because I don't think too many people did.
No, not really. Not really. Look, in the back of your mind, you kind of hope and pray they play well, which is, you know, you can play well and get beaten and take a little bit out of it. But Collingwood at the MCG and the run that the Giants had, like I remember he saying the Bulldogs qualifying final, elimination final, whichever one it was the toughest one because the Bulldogs play fast, hard footy. It was in Sydney and they, you know, ran. They won easy, but I'm a big believer the more you win by, the harder you run to try to get a kick or a handball or whatever it is. And then they had to go to Brisbane.
And that was a brutal game.
That was a big game, you know, in their conditions on their home track. Brutal game. Then coming back to Melbourne to play Collingwood at the MCG, it was a hard road. It was a hard road. And you know, they got, what, 3 out of 4, so it wasn't too bad.
And then I guess Shorey became the elder statesman because a lot of the Giants players would have been gravitating towards him to ask what grand final week is all about. Yep. What do you do? How do you handle it?
Yeah, exactly right. And I know a few of the young blokes you know, after the grand final, even they came up to me and said, you know, I spoke to Heath, whoever it was, might have been Josh Kelly, spoke to Heath about it, and you know what Heath gave them was good, but and there would have been other players also that you know went to Heath and asked him all about it, and people say it's another game, but it's not another game. It's high stakes. You know, it's really big, and you know they looked as though they'd one week too long. They really did. They
played their grand final the week before.
Exactly right. You know, 2.5 quarters, they were with Richmond and then the gates opened and it was all over, yeah.
It's pretty hurtful to lose a grand final like that. You've had close losses in grand finals. Which would you prefer? Would you prefer to be out of your misery early on or would you prefer to take it right until the wire?
Well, the thing about it is if you knew the end result, you want it over and done with pretty quick. But a couple of finals that I played in and, you know, it went down to the line, so you don't know which way it's going to go. And, well, I remember back in 1980, Pete, Richmond did exactly the same to Collingwood.
Yeah.
You know, we were gone. You know, we were we were nowhere near. I think it was about 80 points also. So, you don't know the end of results. So, but in the game this year, it was all over at halftime. You know, so I remember Heath talking to us afterwards. He said to Dusty, Martin, he's playing on him. He said, why don't they just blow the halfway through the third quarter? Why don't they just blow the final siren now? Because we've got no, you know, we're not going to get there. You know, you try, but you're not going to get there.
Yeah, I remember calling the game and we kind of had a little bit of hope that something might change at halftime. And the first 60 seconds or so of that third quarter indicated that all hope was gone. Yeah, they were shot.
They were exactly what, they, and I'm a believer that. And, Reece and I were there early at the grand final. I go to every game pretty early and I like to watch the warm-up. And, you can see whether they're on or they've got a bit of spring. And even Reece and I were talking about they didn't have any spring even before the game. You know, the warm-up, they were flat. They just didn't look lively at all. So, in result, that was the way it was.
On to Reece now. Did you see the signs that he was going to be a coach all the way through his career, or did it come as a bit of a shock to you that he would go down that path?
Not a shock, but I was very surprised when he finished at Sydney. You know, the reputation, and please, his reputation in Sydney was over this world. You know, I was embarrassed sometimes the way the staff, the administration, the coaching, the players spoke about Reece. He really formed a big partnership with all the players, the new and the old and all that, and his reputation was fantastic. And when his playing career come to an end, I thought he might have just taken up a minor development role and all that, but they offered him the second role. And no, I think that was the making of him. I think he was able to, for 2 years, he was able to have his own side and coach him, not the way he wanted to, but coach him the Sydney style. So it gave him a bit of an in about what was going on. So, I think, unfortunately, they got beaten in by close calls in two grand finals in Sydney second. So, but I think it was the making of him. I think he was able to settle himself down and actually see what it was like to be a coach. And then they promoted him to defensive coach the following year. And, he did pretty well that way, yeah.
And then the caretaker job comes up. Yep. And it's a big step. And everybody automatically assumes it's something that you want to do. Did he seek your counsel at all and say, what do you reckon, Dad?
Yeah, he did. He naturally did. As we know, he came over as an assistant coach. He was going to do the defensive role. And with Scotty going, which was a real surprise to everyone in North Melbourne. I think it was a big surprise to everyone in the media that, after 10, 11 years at the club, he decided to go and with the club's permission and all that. And Reece, look, you had Darren Crocker, you had Lee Tudor, you had Gavin Brown, you had all these blokes who had been around the club for a while. And all of a sudden the club's gone to a bloke who'd been there for 6 months and said, would you like to take it over? And the thing that I said to Reece, I said, mate, if you feel comfortable, go and do it. It doesn't matter if you don't win a game. But and you've got to just put a little bit of a mark on them, on the players, so that they know that, you're still there as a coach. You might be the caretaker, but you're still the coach. And the way the players responded was excellent. So, after I've been a bit funny about it, I just said go for it, mate, and this is what's happened. So it's been good.
And they responded, sure, in a couple of ways. They responded in a football sense. It seemed as though they were revitalised. But the other way they responded, and you could see this and hear it whenever they spoke, they responded to Reece as a person, as a bloke. Yep. There seemed to be that understanding between coach and player.
Yeah, look, if you've, as you know, Pete, you've been around sport clubs and things like this, if the coach has got the respect of the players, you're halfway home. You are halfway home. There's no little negatives around the place. Reece, 2000, coming up 2020, just talking to him and just talking to a few of the people around the club and supporters, it looks as though he's set a mark on them and just said, look, this is the way we want to play. This is the way we're going to have to play to be any good. And I think the players have accepted that. They've accepted the way that he's gone about, being with them, whether you're number one player on the list, whether you're number 40, everyone's the same. You've got to treat everyone the same, and that's exactly what he's done.
And even going back to your day, relationships between players and coaches were important, but there are so many coaches these days, but the figurehead is still the man in the senior coaching position, and he's got to have a relationship with everybody.
Exactly right. And, I forgot to mention the the coaches that are with him at the moment, you know, they're right behind him. They're giving him every opportunity. They're offering advice, and Reece is seeking advice off him. So at the moment, if you know, without even playing a game, the place looks a very happy place, and it looks as though 2020 is going to be okay for him too.
So what do you do when North are playing the Giants?
Yeah, I Huda's still there. They get 60-40 or something like that at the moment. So, they're a fantastic club. They've done so well in such a short time. I think this is their ninth year coming up, and what, Premier finals and grand finals. Mm. I know they've got the cream of the crop, but a lot of the cream of the crop's gone too, of course, over that time because, salary cap and all this. But, you know, they're stuck to their guns, and I think they've just got to tinkle with a few things. Players' positions and things like that for them, because you just can't keep going with the same blokes in the same position and not being successful. You've got to tinker a little bit. So I think they will a little bit, yeah.
Are you a believer in the premiership window? Because we often talk about it, that you get that little window of opportunity, but it passes you by pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they have to do it sooner rather than later, or do you think that Giants are a team that can stay up the top for a few years now?
Oh, I think they can stay up there. You know, the competition's just going to get harder and harder for every club in the competition. You know, Richmond's a benchmark, and they didn't even make the grand final 2 years ago, and they're probably the best side for the last two or three years.
Yeah, without question.
I think the window's there. I think their depth is not too bad, but and funny enough, I've been thinking about the last couple of weeks, and I'm not just picking the Giants, picking a lot of clubs where. And I'm going to be interested because I watched the footy pretty closely. The blokes who are tinkering on being, they're just B plus players or B players, they're going to take that next step.
Mm.
And that's a lot of players, in a lot of clubs. You just can't be there as a B plus player or a B player. You've got to elevate yourself to be up there. And if you can't do that, well, the side really doesn't improve that 1%, 2%, or 3%.
Yeah. Well, I often talk about teams only being as strong as their bottom six.
Yeah.
You know, every team's got superstars in their team.
That's right.
But it's the contribution you get from the players sort of 16 to 22.
Without a doubt. They're the most important. Well, not say the most important, but as you say, every side's got their guns and things like this. But the bottom six, they're the ones that I'm talking about. They're the ones that got to elevate themselves to, even if they're a C, which they probably wouldn't be. They've got to get to a B and a B to an A and things like that. It's going to be hard, but players have got to take that progression and go ahead with it.
Anyway, that's enough of talking about Huda and Reece. I want to talk about their old man, and we'll do that when we come back on the other side of the break. Hope you're enjoying the chat with the great Ray Shaw on This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funeral, celebrating lives, and we've got plenty more still to come after the break.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Peter Donegan for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Russo gets a kick over there, punched away that time by Ray Shaw, back towards centre-half, back kicked off the ground by Shaw. He's doing pretty well. Good play by the Collingwood skippers. He takes the ball away.
If he can pick it up, but he can't. Now he can. Ray Shaw with the chance. He races into goals and has put it through.
And Denning puts the ball down. Good piece of roving by Ray Shaw. Goes towards goal and bounces truly.
No one can get clear. There's strong players. We see a pick up by Shaw. A snap for goal.
It's there.
I think he may have put it through. A beautiful goal.
Oh, some famous voices there. Louis and Pete Landy and Bobby Skilton. The great Ray Shaw is my guest on This Is Your Sporting Life. That must take you back. But let's go back even before that story.
Okay, mate. Yep.
Where did the journey all begin? Where did your love affair with footy begin?
As far back as I can remember, I was born in Reservoir. And Reservoir was Collingwood's area back then, the zone area. So, and always bury for Collingwood, always. And coming up through my... probably 10, 11, 12. Len Thompson lived 5 minutes away from me in Gingee Road and in Reservoir. And if it wasn't every day, it was every second day, I'd go up there and try to look over his fence and have a look at it, see if I can see him. And put a few palings off the fence. His old man had a go at me one night about pulling the palings off. And I said, I just want to see Len. He said, he's not here. So before he got me, I just took off. So, but yeah, look, I can go as long as I can remember, Pete. I was always a Collingwood man and... always, I had, even when, going up to see Len Thompson, even from an early age, I had four dreams, four things that I wanted to do. And you can call them dreams. I wanted to play with Collingwood because I barracked for him. I wanted to rove to Len Thompson. I wanted to be captain. I wanted to win a premiership. So once again, Pete, I got three out of four.
Three out of four, and so close to the fourth one as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I just love Collingwood. My sister and I used to go every week, wherever. You know, Glenferrie Oval, where mud and slush and things like that. Anywhere we were going, going to see Collingwood.
Now, those of us who barrack for Collingwood had their spots at Victoria Park where they used to watch the footy. What was your spot?
My spot was in the Yarra River end, in the forward pocket.
Near the scoreboard,
just nearly in the forward, between the scoreboard and the goals, which wasn't very far anyway. But yeah, we used to like that little area because the Collingwood players weren't far away when they ran down the race and things like that. Yeah, that was my favourite spot.
We probably bumped into each other a few times that we didn't know each other at that time. That's where I was. That's where I used to watch it up that end of the ground.
I just used to love it because you just, instead of waiting at the railway end to get in the ground, you can just go down Lully Street, or not Lully Street, one of the little one down there, and just go straight in. And you're there, 20 metres, you're standing ready to go,
You know, one of the memories that I have, the vivid memories of standing at that end of the ground, is watching Peter McKenna putting those drop punts through from the most impossible angles. Yeah. It didn't matter where he was, he could kick a goal, and that was the perfect place to watch it.
He's the best I've ever seen. Kicking for a goal, and if I had the opportunity, I would kick back to him because if I miss, it looked terrible, but he doesn't miss, so I'd rather kick it back to him. But I really don't think I've seen anyone better than him. There may be a couple of blokes close, but not in my memory. He was fantastic, kick for a goal.
So as a young fella, you're dreaming about playing for the Pies, the team that you support. When did you start realising that it was a possibility, that you had the ability to go on and play at the top level?
Well, I started playing senior footy with my uncle Kevin. He coached McLeod Rosanna in the early 70s, and I went from under-19s to seniors that year, and Preston asked me to come across and play three games in their seconds just to have a look. That's what they did those days, have a look at you and see. And I did all right, but I didn't enjoy it because it was like you drive in, drive out. I wasn't at a set club, so I went back to McLeod and played the rest of the seniors. And the following year, Preston invited me down in 1973 to play and train and all that. So I went down there and, Harold Martin and Bobby Ireland and all these blokes, Lenny Clark and Barry Leslie, were all great blokes, and they took me aside and they helped me so much. I was only, I think I weighed about 65, 70 kilos.
Ringing wet.
Ringing wet, mate. I was only a real whippet. So they did that for me, and fortunate enough, at the end of the year, I didn't even know there was a Liston trophy. I didn't even know what was going on. And I was playing basketball at the time at Coburg, and a bloke came up to me at halftime. He said, "Oh, mate, you just won the Liston trophy." And I said, "What are you talking about?" Because, as I said, I didn't even know. I kind of heard of it, but didn't take any notice of it. And then at the end of the game, there was cameras and things like this, and the bloke said, "You won the Liston trophy in the VFA." So really, I would think my year at Preston in 1973, I was able to step up the ladder a little bit and go and play with Collingwood in 1974. And I was lucky enough to play in the very first game, which is even better. Yeah, it was a big step, big step.
The two things the playing in the VFA would have done for you is playing against men. It's always a good thing. And they talk about that as a blooding a young man going into football. The other thing it would have done was it would have made you tough, surely, because it was a tough competition in those days.
Pete, you picked him up right on the spot. I always say to young kids now, if you get the opportunity to go and play senior footy, if you're under 18, now with the under 18s, I think even at this stage, some of those kids who are pretty good, they should just go and have a couple of games in the VFL and things like that, just to get them used to it. And as I said, I started off, with the Preston, and as you say, it was tough, it was hard. Although we only had 16 men aside, you did a lot of running, but it was tough. It was really tough, and blokes, because I was only a whippet, they kind of get you, and it did hurt. It wasn't soft on you, but I had good enforcers behind me, and Harold Martin, a couple of other blokes, they looked after me on the ground, and we didn't have a very good year in 73, but I enjoyed just their company and playing the game. Yeah,
can you remember the first time someone from Collingwood came along and said, "Listen here, young fella, we'd like you playing in the black and white"?
Yeah, the great Jack Regan. Knocked on my door on a Sunday morning, and because I was following Collingwood, I knew Jack straight away. But you see someone like that knocking your door, you don't know what he's going to come and say, or you might be interested, we're looking at you or whatever it is. And Jack come in, and Mum and Dad got him a cup of tea, and we sat down, and I think he must have been there for half an hour. Then all of a sudden he said, "Ray, we'd like you to join Collingwood." We spoke about everything else except about talking about Collingwood, and I was naturally, I think I got on my bike. I can honestly say I got on my bike, went up to the cricket club because I was playing cricket at the time, and told the boys on a Sunday morning that I was going to go and play with Collingwood. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I did, if I'm jumping the gun a little bit, I did exactly the same when they said that I was going to be captain. I did exactly the same because I played cricket for Keon Park for 20-odd years and they were all my mates, and I just so rapt to be involved, firstly in Collingwood and then naturally the second one being captain, yeah.
So the ambition is to play for the team that you loved, and what's the experience like? You're climbing Glenn Thompson's fence at one stage and then you're sitting in that dingy old dressing room with him at Victoria Park. What was that experience like? Was it a bit out of body? Was it a bit surreal?
Oh, look, I remember even the first game, I never slept, you know, because I was just, what's going to happen? You know, I'm going to walk in. Although I trained with the boys all the time, but as you say, Pete, playing a game of VFL that time and is, you know, it's hard and it's tough and things like that. And for me to walk in the rooms, I think I was shaking still even before I ran out on the ground. Because you just don't. No, I was going to say, you don't want to make a fool of yourself, but you want to get a few kicks and things like that. But, you know, it probably just wasn't Tomo, you know, the Richardsons and the Ross Duns and all those blokes. The blokes who I'd grown up watching for so long, all of a sudden I'm just about to run out on the ground with them and try to get a kick.
How long did it take you to feel comfortable with the tempo and the pressure of the game at the top level?
Oh, it took me probably nearly halfway through, yeah, because, you know, VFA compared with VFL is completely different. It's, you know, you're playing with better players and that, but also the thing, when I was playing the VFA, I was on the ball a lot of the time, you know, playing centre, even at my young age, I was playing centre and rover, but when come to Collingwood, you know, the Ronnie Weirmouse, I was sharing the load with him, and it's something that I wasn't used to instead of, you know, standing in the forward pocket for 50% of the time. It wasn't my gay because I like to be involved in that. But it took its time, and you know, there's another bloke, Ronnie Weirmouth, who was a great mentor to me. He was fantastic. So and it was an absolute pleasure playing with him, an absolute pleasure roving with him. Yeah, it was great.
And he had some serious hair too.
Oh, serious hair, yeah. And he's the most courageous player that I've seen.
Really?
If Ronnie didn't have blood on his head or a blood nose or a black eye at the end of the game, something was wrong. And we had a fantastic relationship. We worked so well together with Tomo in the ruck. And Ronnie, he said to me one day, he said, mate, if you're killing him, you're on the ball and you're killing him, you stay. Don't come off. And I thought that was great to come from a bloke who, you know, played a few games and a very good player. And we kind of shared that in the end. You know, when Ronnie was playing well, I just said, mate, keep going. Because you come off the ball, you lose all your momentum and the tempo of the game. So, yeah, that was, you know, I really enjoyed my footy in those days. It was great.
Now, Ronnie was not the strongest built fella in the world.
No.
And nor were you, as you said, you know, you're only a weedy little thing.
Yeah.
Is that the reason that the long sleeves came out?
Without a doubt.
Yeah?
Without a doubt. Nobody, don't show it, I reckon.
The spaghetti arms?
Spaghetti arms. You haven't got them? Don't show them. But I just felt comfortable with a long sleeve, yeah.
Do you ever wear a sleeveless? You did once, didn't you?
Once against South Melbourne. It was really hot, really. And unfortunately, you know, when it's hot, you perspire a lot and the sleeves are about another 6 inches long, so I couldn't even feel my hands. So I did that after half time. But yeah, that was about the only time I did it, yeah.
Just didn't feel comfortable?
I didn't feel comfortable at all. And then I decided my wife got me jumper and she kind of cut it halfway up my arm, my forearm, so that, it, you know, if it did get perspiration, it wouldn't go down further. So I was able to wear a three-quarter a sleeve one, yeah. So was, but I just felt so comfortable wearing a long sleeve. Didn't matter hot or didn't matter it was cold. I just enjoyed it, yeah.
Doesn't matter what era, Shorey, you play for Collingwood, there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of eyes on you. There's a lot of people wanting to tell you what you're doing wrong rather than what you're doing right. It was the same in your day.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. You know, the media scrutiny wasn't as big as it is now, but, you know, if you play a bad one, people will tell you, you know, and you wouldn't get in a Sporting Globe on the way home. You leave that in the news agent.
The old pink paper, right?
Pink paper, I still love it, especially when you played all right, you know. But, look, there's a lot of people, but yeah, you know, the Collingwood people are pretty thick. You know, you go back into the social club after a win or after a loss, they were pretty much the same. But outside, completely different. You know, people would get into you and the media would get into you if you weren't playing well and things like that. But you're in a game that's going to happen. It's going to happen all the time. So you just got to take it. You just got to accept it. And I think the best thing is you've got to read it. You got to read it. You know, you got to, like, I've got my scrapbook. Fair enough, though. People say the only good things you put in scrapbook is good things. But I've got a few things that people woke me up and said, get on with it. You know, instead of being doing this and doing that, you've got
to Can you bring one to mind that you've read a few times over and over again over the years?
I think it was Scotty Palmer wrote one. He said that, and this is getting close to the end of my career, and fair enough too, I changed my game, Pete. Not patting myself on the back. I thought I was a pretty ferocious bloke at the ball, and, you know, even when the opposition got the ball, I was ferocious at them. And I started to get hurt a little bit, and I thought, why should I do this? Why should I do it? Not telling anyone else, why should I do it? So I became an outside player, and I didn't like it. And the last, good luck to Scotty. He picked it up, and before the finals, he wrote a little article and saying that, you know, in other words, I've changed my game. I've got to get back to where I was. And in the finals, I tried to do it. You know, we weren't successful, but I did take that a leaf from someone who, I met Scotty here and there and everywhere. But he'd seen a lot of footy, and I took it on board. I thought, yep, you're right, mate. I'll see what I can do about it.
And once you took it on board, you'd take it all the way to the big game, yep. 3 years in a row. We'll talk about that when we come back on the other side of the break. You just said something, though, that a lot of footy supporters have said over the years. You said it in a different context, though. You said Collingwood supporters are very thick. I seem to have heard that from a lot of other football supporters at various times over the years.
Yeah, they're a good mob, Collingwood supporters.
They are. We are, yes. We are. Let's go to a break, Shorey, and we'll come back and we'll talk about those great sides of the late 70s and early 80s. Hope you're enjoying the chat with Ray Shaw on This Is Your Sporting Life. For Tobin Brothers Funeral, celebrating lives, plenty more still to come.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Peter Donegan. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
And Craig Davis marks. About 50-odd metres out from goal, goes on the wide arc and screws the ball back in towards full forward. King is there, he taps it down towards Morris, who's roving to the pack. A call from Ray Shaw, has a quick look, over his shoulder, he fires, and it's Collingwood's eighth goal. And the second goal to Ray Shaw.
Just one of the brilliant goals that Ray Shaw kicked in his career. That was the voice of Peter Booth, who was also Collingwood supporter. And in fact, if we go forward a little bit to when your brother was playing in 1990, Peter Booth was actually calling that game for the ABC, and he could hardly talk.
Is that right?
He was so emotional when it got towards the end of the last quarter. He just had a lump in his throat the size of a watermelon.
Yeah, I could imagine that. That was a great day for the Pies.
Yeah, it was. And a few good days, not quite the same back in the late 70s and early 80s. First of all, the captaincy.
Yep.
Was it something that you sought, or was it something that was thrust upon you?
Oh, you'd probably say that, you know, as I said, you know, it's always been a dream to do it. And I was probably in a good position at that time to take it over. And you know, the club come to me and asked me. You know, it wasn't me. I deserve it or something like that. It's something that I was waiting for it to happen. I wanted it to happen in whether it was that year or the year after, or whatever it is. I was kind of waiting for it to happen, and hopefully I was in the right form, the right position, and the right spot to get it. And I just loved it. I just loved although. You have plenty of captains on the field anyway, Pete. You know, not in the captain's role, but my game was built around talking and encouraging the players. So I was really, you can probably say I was a captain in the waiting, really. So that's the way I played footy all the way through. So even if I didn't get the gig, I would have continued in the same boat anyway.
Everyone always talks about grand finals, and we have to.
Yeah.
As painful as that might be. 79. First thing I'll ask you about 79. How far out was it? Wayne Harm's kick. How far out over the boundary line was it?
Yeah, look, as that, you probably go through the review these days and all that. And the thing that I couldn't understand about it, sorry not answering your question, but I couldn't understand how there was two Carlton blokes standing in the goal square by themselves. Kenny Sheldon. And there's someone else not far away from him. So, you know, everyone's eyes is on Harms, but my you know, like he could have knocked the ball into a Collingwood player and away you go, but he knocked it in. Fantastic football. Knocked it in, and Kenny Sheldon standing the goal square by himself. So, it was very hard to take. Very hard to take, yep.
Does it take you 12 months to get over that sort of thing? Is the only way that you can get revenge on what happened to win the next year, and you qualified to win the next year.
No, I don't look at it that way. I think I'm a big believer in grand finals. There's two sides in it. There's a lot of sides that miss out. So you're in there. Is the best side going to win on the day? If it's a tight contest, well, which one's the best side? So the way things just worked out, I think you just got to have it in the back of your mind when the next season comes along and pre-seasons, everyone's talking about Collingwood going to revenge it and things like that. But I think once you get going the next season, pre-season, it's a little bit of the back of your mind, so you just take every game as it comes and hopefully you're good enough to be there in September.
In the middle of the night these days, Shuri, do you wake up and see the number 29 for Richmond in your worst nightmares running around and just tearing everyone to shreds?
Yeah, I've done it a few times. Not lately, but I have done it probably, within 3 or 4 years after that 1980 grand final. And, well, fantastic performance. We just couldn't, as I mentioned earlier, we were gone. We just didn't have any life in our legs. And they're probably the best side. You look at the Brisbane's now, or the Brisbane's a couple of years ago. Richmond in those days, from back line to forward line, midfield, they were probably one of the best sides you would have seen in the history of football, I reckon. They were a great side.
And then 81, it happens again.
Yeah.
Did you start to believe in the Collie Wobbles that everybody was talking about? Did it ever infiltrate your thinking, the fact that it just kept on happening?
Yeah. I would say probably 10% of my mind was focused about the Collie Wobbles and, do we work so hard and not get result, which we did. We really worked hard under Tommy and, people got to remember, in 1976, we finished last on the ladder.
Yeah.
And, 77 in the grand final and for the next 4 or 5 years, we're in grand final. So Tommy had done an amazing job and, I think fitness was the biggest thing and he got us all fit and the club was happy. The club was successful without winning flags and a lot of credit's got to go to him. Mate, I even think about it now. I've seen Heath get one. I've seen Reece get one and I'm thinking, what about me? Why couldn't I got one? But That's in the past.
You get together with your teammates and you'd keep in contact with your teammates. But the one thing that everybody says who's played in a premiership is that bomb will never be broken. Mm. Whereas the guys who have come close say that hole that's in your guts will never heal.
There's no reunions, mate.
Yeah.
We don't have any reunions because we didn't win one.
Yeah.
Even my Preston days, we have reunions. And so it's a great day to catch up with all the blokes who you play with and all that. But unfortunately, I play with some fantastic players at Collingwood. And we've mentioned a lot since we've been here. And, it would have been fantastic just to have, get one so that we could have a reunion and talk about it and just share so many great memories. Yeah, it would have been fantastic.
Just one quick thing, because we're running out of time.
Sure.
Tell us where Tassie fitted into the picture for you towards the end of your time at Collingwood.
Yeah, that was a bit. I think I left because I just, we're talking about losing the grand final, and I just had to get out of Melbourne, Pete. I just thought, and I was only a young bloke then, and I just said, I've got to get out of here. And the Devonport Footy Club approached me, and I thought, oh, why not? I wasn't thinking about Collingwood. I wasn't thinking about really anything else. I was just thinking about myself. And I was sat disappointed with the result. And we could have won a premiership. And it just got me down. And you know what Melbourne's like, even the week after a grand final, it's just helter-skelter. And I just said, I've got to get out of here. And still, as I said, Devonport approached me. And I thought, oh, yeah, I might do that. But not knowing the consequences about clearances and things, I just had to get out of Melbourne. Yeah.
So you went down there, but it didn't last long.
No, I went down there probably I was appointed captain coach. I took him for pre-season training for about 4 or 5 weeks. Then Peter Luger said, "Come on, mate, you're coming back," and that was it. Yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm. When I look at your numbers, Shuri, the one thing that strikes me, because we identify you as Collingwood, you were Collingwood for so long, but it was only, how many games? 146. Mm. Why was it only that number?
8 years. Played 8 years.
Yeah.
You could probably add 12 think I got suspended for 12 weeks over that time. So, that, you know, I missed in 81, early 81, I missed 10 weeks with my knee. I did my knee. So I was in plaster for 10 weeks, came back, played my only game in the seconds, which getting up early.
How was that? Kicking the Jew off.
Kicking the Jew off, yeah. Kevin Morris would come back from injury too, and we both played in that game. And then the following week, I got back in, and Kev, I think Kev got back in too, and then we kind of waltzed in the finals. But, yeah, I probably 146 could have been probably 170, Pete, I reckon, 170-odd, if I hadn't had injuries and suspension, yeah. So.
And you got to the end of the 146. Were you happy you got absolutely everything out of it, apart from that time where you – by your own admission, you became an outside player and just tried to take the easy way for a little while. But at the end of it, were you pretty pleased with what you'd put in?
Oh, I think so, Pete. Yeah, I think from day one, game one, right through, I went out there and I just did my best, whatever I could do. You have your good days, you have your bad days, and but you just got to come back next week and throw all the bad games behind you, and hopefully that you're going to be in for a good one. And yeah, a good one doesn't mean you get a lot of possessions; it's how you go about it. And in at the end of the game, naturally, if you won, you're more thrilled for everyone. If you lost, well, you just got to get on the bike and say, well, we're going to be better than that next week. And that's the way I went about it. But yeah, I was very happy with my career, and you know, I could have left it in the end of 76. I could have gone to North Melbourne, and because the club was in turmoil. It was just terrible, but they got Tommy over, and he sparked us up a bit, and the end of 81, that was the end. Yeah.
But it wasn't the end of your football journey. There was still a bit to come. We'll talk about that. We're just about out of time.
Yeah,
sure. But our final segment with Ray Shaw, and the wheel turns full circle. He finds himself back in the red and white at Cramer Street again. And that's all still to come with Shorey on the other side of the break. This is your sporting life for Tobin Brothers Funerals. Celebrating lives. Hope you're enjoying the show.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Peter Donegan for Tobin Brothers Funerals. Celebrating lives.
What a great chat it's been to the great Ray Shaw on This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funeral Celebrating Live. Shorey, I alluded to it before the break. It turned full circle. You find yourself back at Preston again, very successfully too.
Yeah, look, it was great. At the end of 81, Tommy rang me and he said, look, Ray, I think it's time to leave. And very short conversation, but, you know, if the coach doesn't want you don't belong at the club. So I decided to leave. And there's only North and Essendon showed it. Little bit of interest, but unfortunately, Pete, I was a very loyal person, and I said to myself, I can't play against my mates. You know, the blokes who I played for the last 8 years with, I'm not going to play against them. It would have been so hard for me to do that. And I decided to go back to Preston in 1982 and as a playing coach, and we were a very successful club for the 3 years that I was there, and it was just great to get back there. And the old Cramer Street Oval, I walk in there even these days watching different games and that. It just hits you as though I've been here before. And
it was a cauldron, wasn't it?
It's a good place to be. It's a good place to be. And we were, I think, in something like in the 3 years that I was there, we won 52 out of 59 games or something, Peter. We were a very good side, you know. And we worked very hard together. Yeah, it was really good.
And just the last bit on the Collingwood Association, you could never do it, but how proud were you when your brother – in 1990, grabbed hold of that Premiership Cup with Lee Matthews and lifted it up.
That was unbelievable. And, you know, for a bloke of, you know, people talk about Tony, you know, all this can't kick, can't run.
Too slow.
313 games later, he was going. And he looked fantastic. And the way he set it up for him too, he was in there and he's biting and scratching and doing all this and talking to the opposition. But he was a fabulous leader. You know, people don't really recognise him, but he's one of the greatest leaders that Collingwood have ever seen, and well deserved. He deserved every minute of that final.
And of course, Neville played for the Black and White as well, so it's a great dynasty of the family.
Yep.
All right, we're just about at the end. Who wins the flag first, Collingwood, North, or the Giants?
I've got to go GWS because I've backed them all the way through. So hopefully, look. But if it's North, the place wouldn't be still for a month, I reckon, if North won it. And the place would never still if Collingwood win it anyway, Pete. So what a great thing, you know, have the, you know, haven't played against each other because I'm on a winner all the way through, so it would be great. Yeah, would be great for the whole three sides to be in the finals and fighting it out.
And the last question, Shorey, we're big payers here. Obviously, the huge amount of money that you're getting for coming into this show today. Say if I was to give you sporting tickets to any event in the world, would the first one still be that game they play on the last Saturday in September at the MCG?
Without a doubt. And as long as I was playing in it, Peter, would be even better.
You're a champ.
Thanks,
you
mate.
Have been a great representative of your football club, and your family has been synonymous with the game. It's been brilliant to have a chat to you over the last hour. Thanks for coming in, Shorey.
My pleasure, Pete, and thank you very much.
Ray Shaw, my guest on This Is Your Sporting Life for Tobin Brothers Funeral, Celebrating Lives. What a pleasure it was to be able to sit down with Shorey. We'll do it again next week, so we hope you can be with us then.
You're listening to This Is Your Sporting Life with Peter Donegan for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.